Succession number 9751, reel 10.
Mr. Frank Rayne, reel 10. You were rushed into the line in 1918. You're not quite sure of the date. What was the general area you were rushed up to?
Well, when we got there, it was all open country. There were no trenches. The Germans must have come. It was up.
So by the time you arrived, they'd already broken through the
British... Oh, yes, they were coming through, and we never got settled before we were running back again.
Which bit of the front were you on?
Well, I don't really know. But all I remember is a place called Cassel, a hill.
Was this towards Belgium, then?
Towards Belgium. Yes.
Can you describe exactly what happened as you were put into the broken line?
It was all disorganised and there was nobody in authority. There was nothing. And what happened was we used to make a bit of a stand...
But what happened when you first... I mean, the unit broke up, apparently. How did it first... I mean, you arrived as a battalion. What happened then?
Well, we stayed together as near as possible.
But why did you start falling back? I mean...
Because the Germans were coming round the side of us.
And who told you that?
You could see them. You could see them in hundreds. Now then, I got myself into a little trench... that had been dug, and there was a man in front of me, probably a quarter of a mile, in a village, and he was directing traffic. So I got myself into line with him to fire at him, knowing that if I missed him, my bullets would go down the road and probably hit something else. And I fired till my gun wouldn't fire anymore, till it was... practically red hot. I fired 120 rounds and I was as happy as a king.
Did you hit him?
Well, yeah, I moved several times. They kept putting somebody or else the same man back, but I must have hit something in 120 rounds. And it was joy to me. You know, I take that, you bugger, take that, you. Every time you shot.
Oh, were you on your own at this time?
I was on my own entirely.
What had happened to the rest of the unit?
They'd retreated.
Had you been told to stay behind and do
this? No. But what my aim was, and what I soon saw... Now, there was one particular instance where there was a... It wasn't a stream in a field, but it was about 10 feet broad and about 3 feet deep. There was a bridge across it, and our lads were in the retreat, were walking, all aiming for this bridge, and he was shooting them down on piece. I said, "Blazes, I'm not going over that." So I got about 200 yards away from it, threw me gun across the water, and me clothes as much as I could, and then waded in and walked across and redressed at the other side. And when they started to come forward, I started to fire on them. But if everybody had done as I did, they'd have pulled those jokers up in no time. Because they weren't good troops.
What do you mean? Why weren't they? How could you tell they weren't good troops?
Well, I looked a motley crush. Now then, we got further back... And there were our lads were lying about. You have to pass them and looking up, imploring you at you. You could do nothing for them.
What, they were exhausted or wounded?
Wounded. And I joined up with some Australians.
So the unit had largely...
Oh, it had absolutely disintegrated.
Do you think this was partly because of the low morale of the 18th, to start with, that it couldn't hold together?
No, it was more the low morale of people on our flanks. and the lack, and then the lack of control from above to tell him to stop and make a stand. If he'd stopped and dug in and made a stand, I'm always confident that they could have held them up, which was proved a few days afterwards. As soon as we stopped, stood and got anything like defences, came to a standstill again.
So, as you were falling back, would you actually run as you were retiring? How did you plan your own personal retreat?
It was very clever. I used my brains. I retreated when they were advancing. Now then, our other lot used to run all together, and the Germans used to shoot them down. But then the Germans had to start an advance. That was when I retreated. I was within 200 yards of them many a time before I got up and ran. Absolutely on my own, not a soul.
Did you come under fire a lot?
No, not that I know of.
How long were you retreating for? How many days in this fashion?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe a week.
How did you get your supplies? For instance, you fired 120 rounds of ammunition, you said. How did you...
Got them from other fellows, wounded ones. But I don't know what we did for grub. I've no slightest idea. I remember the last memory was... a butcher's shop, and there was a half a beast of meat hanging in the butcher's shop, and I don't remember anybody cutting anything off it because we had nowhere to cook it, and the half this beef was left there as far as I know when we went on again. And I remember a beautiful farm that day and a wounded cow with a being shot in the foot, the rear foot, and it was just wondering about the farm mooing, and I was torn between what to do with it. I was thinking about shooting it, and then I thought, well, I'll leave it to the Germans and finish. That's what.
How did you feel as you were running back?
Horrible. Horrible. The lowest I ever felt in my life, I think.
In what way?
Well, his spirits, to think that you'd gone through all that and you were running away, then you were licked and running away from them.
Did you think you were beaten?
Yes, well, it jolly well looked at it like that. But the funniest thing was that things seemed to go on in the same as previously. And it wasn't long after that I got leave.
I'll come to that. Now, yes. As you were retreating, did you feel you'd been used to trenches of one sort and another for the last 3 or 4 years?
Yes.
How did you feel being out in the open? Did it make you feel vulnerable in any way, or did it make you feel free? How did it make you feel?
Well, it was a change. And after trenches, it was... apart from the running away, you felt cleaner to start with. Yes. And it was, as I say, it was a change. After over 2 years knocking about in those filthy places, anything was better. Except, of course, running away, which wasn't nice at all.
Where would you sleep at night? I mean, with the Germans being so close.
Just tossed down where you were.
But weren't you afraid of being overrun in the night?
We had to risk that.
How far ahead did you get of the Germans?
How far?
Ahead. Because you can't have been just 200, quarter of a mile ahead of the
Wall. Oh, perhaps a mile before I caught up with the others and they'd stopped. Half of them were exhausted. I remember them lying on the bank. I remember... Major Tilly, who had been our company commander in the early days, and I remember him and his entourage resting on a bank And I thought, that's the nearest you've ever been, because I've never seen you in the trenches. Major Tilly. And he was killed that particular day, a mile back. Just a spare bit of shrapnel.
Did you meet any...
So it shows that no matter whatever you did, they always used to say, if your name's on it, you've had it. But, of course, that's a lot of driv, because there were ways of helping yourself if you had a mind to it. Doing the best you could for cover and that sort of thing.
So you valued...
not asking for it. You could ask for it and get it. Because you could get it without asking for it. But on the other hand, there was a bit of sense in doing the best you could to safeguard yourself.
Were you often separated from the unit like that, being on your own?
No. Just that particular, probably a week.
No, I mean during the week. Were you often separated from the unit?
Oh, yes. Frequently, as I say, then they got the order they retired. I didn't retire.
You do that every time?
Do that every time.
Well, did anyone talk to you about that? I mean...
Nobody ever said a word, no. My only danger there was being shot by our own people. You see, before I caught up with them. That was the only thing that I thought of. Some daft joker might see me and take me for a German or something.
Did you come into contact with any French or Belgian civilians, refugees?
Not in that retreat. They'd all gone, they'd all fled. There was this lovely farm up at Beaver. It would probably be... a big dairy farm, and it was spotlessly clean, and it had just been left, and the one injured cow.
Was there any temptation to loot in your mind as you went by, or take souvenirs rather, perhaps, than actual looting?
No, it never crossed my mind, and I don't think it was a question of carrying them, you see. What could you carry? I mean, it would have to be something small if you did loot. But I never saw anybody looting anything. I believe when I looked in at that side of Beef, I believe there'd been some cut off it. But I saw no point in cutting a meat off that if I couldn't eat it myself, cook it. But if it'd been left, like the cow, I thought, well, the blooming Germans are going to get that. If I could have done anything to stop them getting that cow, I would have done it. But I thought, if I shoot it, they'll still eat it, so... There we are. Because the Germans, you know, it was found out at that time, we didn't beat them in battle. We beat them from the inside. The very thing that they were trying to do to us, to starve us out, you see. When we took some prisoners once, when they saw the bread that we got, the rice popped out of their heads.
You mentioned that, yes, earlier on.
Yes. They couldn't believe that we were getting food like that. And the coffee. Because we didn't get coffee, but the tea, they didn't get coffee from them practically at the beginning of the war.
During the retreat, did you suffer a lot from tiredness or fatigue?
No.
What about hunger? You say you didn't know how you got your food.
I was as fit as a fiddle. I just, before that, ran second in the division's cross-country run of 8 miles. I have a medal upstairs there. Second. And if I'd known what I'd known now, I'd have won. Because I didn't bother at the beginning. I didn't think I had much chance. We went on running and running and running, and I was passing these people as they'd fallen out, till I only saw this one fellow in front of me, and he was the first. Oh, I was in tip-top trim.
Did you train for that sort of running?
No, but I was playing football regularly.
While you were out at rest?
Yes.
What about boxing? Had you taken boxing up?
Well... I came to a sticky end with boxing. I was doing quite nicely, boxing ordinary lads like myself, till I got into the ring with a fella, and I'd hardly got into the ring, and I was watching his feet when something hit me. And that's all I remembered. That's the last time I've been in a ring.
When was that?
Oh, it must be some time when we were out on rest there in between those periods.
Quite late in the war, then?
Yes, oh yes.
Do you think this sporting activity had helped you during the retreat to bring up the fitness that you needed?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes, I was fit as a fiddle. I could outrun the German army.
Do you think that was that a factor in why you survived during this retreat?
It helped. It helped because I could... Although, of course, you can't outrun a bullet. I mean, if there'd been a bullet fired at me accurately, however fast you run, it would have still caught you. But it shortened the period that I was in danger.
And you think that your sporting activities had helped bring on that fitness that gave you that edge?
Oh, yes. That and the way I looked after myself.
How did you look after yourself, then?
Well, I got the best of the food there was.
How did you arrange that?
With the quartermaster. And we're a separate unit. I was the old fellas. For instance, at one part, there was a railway line, and it went through a gully, and they'd cut away into the side, and there were forms around where the railway people evidently went for the grub and that sort of thing, you see, the meals. Well, six of us got permission. The camp would be about 50 yards away. Six of us got permission to live in this place separately. Yes, so we had bits of things like that, and we had one man looked after the kitty, other two did the scrounging, and other two would do the shopping. It would be somewhere, a village not very far away or something, you see.
What was scrounging? Can you I know what it is, but if you could explain.
Well, it was not doing anything you could avoid.
It wasn't trying to get things, and, you know.
Oh, no, well, not doing anything you could avoid, and else you used to say, being scrounging around for something. For instance, we found a potato field once. The farmer, well, we used to dig under the potato tops with our hands and pull the taties off the roots and never touch the tops. little things like that we used to do.
So you think that this sort of scrounging and slight favouritism towards the old people, that also gave you an edge when it came to the retreat in your superior physical condition?
Oh, it was the knowledge and common sense and experience.
Did the unit suffer a lot of casualties during the retreat?
Well, a fair considerable number.
What were they mainly from?
Bullets.
Not artillery, then, no?
No, they couldn't get the artillery up. I remember seeing some artillery galloping along a road, and I didn't fire because I thought it was ours. I was only about 200 yards away as well. But there must have been an odd shell, because this Major Tilly was killed by a bit of shrapnel, which was fired just haphazard.
But it wasn't a major threat compared to small arms machine guns?
It was the firing that, yes.
How did the retreat come to an end for you, then? For you?
I cannot remember. I just remember it stopping. And now here's the grisly start of my life in the army. I was having a shower, so it must have been fairly permanently stopped again. And
was this a shower or a bath?
A shower. No baths. And I looked down and I saw a lump in my throat. And I said to the chap next to me, "Hey, I said, what's this?" And he had a look. He thought I was joking. "Oh," he said, "you've got a hernia. Or you're ruptured or something." I said, "Have I?" "Oh," he said, "get yourself to the doctor, lad, you're made." So that was the beginning of it. I went to the doctor and I was due for leave. And I explained this to the doctor and I said, and I'd been hit in the arm with a bit of shrapnel as well. I had that, you see.
When did that happen?
I don't know.
Was it during the retreat or after?
During the retreat. After the retreat.
So you were back in and out of the line by now?
Well, it wasn't a line. I don't think there were any trenches there. Just more or less just bits you'd dug out.
Positions.
There were no permanent positions. And I explained about going on leave to the doctor. "Oh," he said, "right," he said, "I'll give you a note if you like. Or I'll give you a note, give to a doctor." He gave me a note, you see, about a fortnight afterwards. I was put on light duty. About a fortnight afterwards, I went...
Were you in any pain at all from this?
I never felt a twinge from that day to this.
Did you know when you'd done it?
No. No.
Had you reported the wound in your arm?
No. As I thought that would stop me going on leave, you see.
How bad a wound was it?
Well, I was that pleased to see it, I didn't notice it much. But it was about...
Had you had it treated at all?
Just an ordinary field dressing.
Now, is this the wound you mentioned you'd left with the view to it getting worse?
That's right, yes.
How had you gone about that? Could you explain what you'd done?
No, I just had this bandage on it and just left it and never bothered to change the bandage or anything.
Had it still got shrapnel in it, or...?
Well, it had for a day or two.
So yes. You left that in for a while and then you didn't change your dressing?
That's right.
And you were hoping for infection?
I was hoping something would happen to it. Anyhow, the hernia... Well, we didn't know there were hernias then. Didn't call them hernias. I never heard of that. So, I got me leave, and I came on leave.
When was that?
Oh, midsummer, August 17 or 18.
18.
Midsummer 18. That was the second leave I had all the time. And I had me leave and went out to Seaton, where one of our ex-MOs was supposed to be, called MacFarlane. And sure enough, MacFarlane was there. And of course, by this time, I was rigged out with all sorts of stripes and fancy things to show your division and colours, and we had the 1914-15 medal and the other two, and I think I had three blue stripes.
What did that mean?
And a red one, a year's service abroad, and a red one was for 14-15 and the others were for the time I'd been out there. Well, of course, they acted like magic in this country. Now, a particular instance, this was at Staincliffe, Seaton Carew, where they went. There was a sergeant and an officer drilling some recruits. And I walked straight past, took no notice of them. And a great, horrible, raucous shout went up. "Hey, you!" I took no notice. "Hey, you!" Took no notice. Then I felt it tearing across. His horrible-looking sergeant came across. He said, "Hey, you!" Said, "Don't you know an officer when you see one?" I just turned round, and, of course, he saw then Oh, I said, oh. They said, there's no fish there, you didn't salute. No, I said, I've given that up. And I just walked past him and he never said another word. I said, I want to see my friend, Dr. McFarlane. And Dr. McFarlane marked me off for Newcastle Hospital at the end of my leave. I didn't go till about the last day or two, day before the last. And then he said, I'll give you a entry into the hospital. And then my fun started in the hospital. There again, I was favoured. And I remember a sister looking at my arm.
So you reported it now you were in England?
Oh, yes, I reported when I got to hospital. I reported it to Dr. McFarlane, and he bound it up. He told me I was a bloody fool. You see, I might have lost my arm. So I said, of course, there's hundreds of fellas would gladly give an arm to get out of that. So got to hospital, and great big hospital, like a station, just about 200 yards long, I think, with four lots of beds, two on the outside and two lots in the middle. And I had an operation for it. Incidentally, it was performed by one of the King's surgeons, Sir somebody, I've forgotten his name. And but there was a little thing happened years afterwards. Well, a year or so afterwards, I might tell you about. But had the operation and then went up to Weilham-on-Tyne after about a fortnight. By the way, I had four ex-lads came to see me while I was in hospital. How they knew I was there, I never found out. I never asked them. And went up to a big house on the Tyne at Weilham. And there again I was treated with the utmost respect. The old doctor used to come once a fortnight, and he was an old civilian doctor. And he said, now then, how are you now? Yeah, I said, I'm all right, doctor. I said, that's no way of going on. He said, I'll mark you back for another fortnight, you've had enough. And that was how I was treated. I was up there for weeks, a couple of months, I should think, when I needed to have been. Back again, I came to Newcastle Barracks. There was nobody in charge there. I never saw a soul. We used to get our food. Now, that was all.
Well, how long had this taken then? You'd gone on leave in which months, do you reckon?
Gone on leave about August.
And how long was it that you were kept back by this doctor? Was it through to the armistice or
2 months? No, I should think
just short of
I should think altogether I'd be in hospital 3 months. In Newcastle Infirmary.
So that would be just short of the armistice then?
Oh yes, we went through, did all the two turns with all the two places. I went from convalescence to the Newcastle Barracks, where I was only there a week. And from there to South Shields. And there again, I fell on my feet. I reported to the skating rink, with about 200 people in it. And there was a sergeant there, and he spotted me. Of course, these ribbons and things were at Open Sesame. And oh, he said, hello, Derham's? Aye. What Derham's? I said, 18th. He was an ex-18th fellow, and I didn't know him. Oh, he said, you don't want to keep here. He said, come across with me. And there we're in what they called a parish hall. And I joined him and about six others in this parish hall. We had a billiard table there, and in the middle of the room was a great big cork boiler, and it was beautiful and warm. I never did a parade. We just went across to the rink for our grub.
What were your duties?
And any I did get a duty later on I was in charge of three fellas cleaning the canteen. They went to clean the canteen and I was in charge of them. And we got a cup of horrible cocoa and a horrible sly cake, which of course wasn't horrible to us then. It did. That was my duty.
Now, the war was still going on then while you were at South Shields.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, how did you feel about being sent back to the Western Front? If you had been. I mean, I know you weren't, but how would you have reacted?
Badly. Badly. I would have had to go, I suppose, but I had a feeling I wouldn't.
Did you think the war was coming to an end?
No, not at that time. I'm not sure, though, because things were getting very lax. There was very little discipline at South Shields. For instance, they used to set off in the morning, probably 200 of them, on a route march, and there'd be a sergeant at the front and an officer at the back, or vice versa, and at every street they came to, there used to be half a dozen or so used to dash into this side street, you see, and instead of finishing with a couple of hundred, they finished with about 100. The others had sloped off, and there was never anything said. There was never any...
And that was before the armistice?
Yes.
That was already